Well, hello, everybody. Thank you so much for listening on this very special April the 29th. I'm Amanda Barker.
And I'm Bill Antoniou.
And I'm Marco Timpano.
Yep, you get all three. And as of today, all three of us are vaccinated.
That's right. That's I got Pfizer.
I got AstraZeneca.
And I rounded out the trio with a Moderna today.
So we'll see who dies first.
Oh, my goodness. Well, today, since it's not our very last day. What is it called? Penultimate?
Penultimate, yeah.
Penultimate. Our penultimate born on this day. And what a journey it has been. I mean, we'll wax more poetic tomorrow. But it's hard not to just think, wow, we've been on a journey and we end up being vaccinated.
Yeah.
Yep. To think that I might get my Tuesday nights back, I mean,
to think that I might get our friendship back, you know?
No, actually, the recording part is fun. When I finished the last script and realized I didn't have to do that anymore because I actually was writing them every day for a whole year.
Yep.
That's when I was like, oh, wow. Like, that's when a weight felt like lifted.
Did it feel lifted because you didn't have to write them anymore or you didn't have to hear me massacre them anymore?
Wow. Bit of column A, bit of column B there, Marco.
Well, listen, I hope you're happy with this, Bill, because I know Amanda is. Today is National Shrimp Scampi Day.
It is indeed. I love me a good shrimp scampi. Bill, do you like fish, though? I don't know that you do.
Not a huge fish guy, but I am a huge seafood guy.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So do you like? So does that mean shrimp, like seafood?
Oh yeah, yeah. And I do like fish occasionally too. It's rare that I pick it, but I have enjoyed a good fish many a time. It's not a favorite though.
Yeah, I thought at some point. I'm sure at some point this year, we've had that conversation. Mm-hmm. Hey fans, trivia, go find that conversation.
Yep, you only have 365 episodes to wade through.
But Marco just took a picture.
Took a picture of Bill's script and his face because. I can see him.
For the penultimate.
For the penultimate. I wanted to send it to him.
Well, anyway, let's do the work in front of us while we still have it. On April 29th, we celebrate all things shrimp, but particularly shrimp scampi. Of course, it's butter, it's garlic, it's lemon juice, it's white wine, and it's delicious, delicious cockroaches of the sea that I absolutely love.
Matt is the only person I know who watched my octopus teacher and said, I'm hungry.
I really was hungry for that entire.
She's like, I could really go for
octopus. I felt guilty for being hungry, but I really was hungry. Like, I was like, just those juicy tentacles. Like, I really do love octopus. But I felt guilty.
You know what?
I felt guilty.
That was one of the most angering moments at the Oscars for me on Sunday was my octopus teacher winning over four highly superior documentaries.
And how many people watched those two and go, was that the guy? I didn't think that was the guy. Because that's all I was like, was that the guy that was like,
oh, you mean the guy who accepted the award?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, yeah. It wasn't. No.
But and then you're like, okay, you're the producers. We don't actually know you. We just know there was a guy with an octopus.
Yeah.
And I spent the whole time going, is that him? And I'm sure I am not the only one that did that, actually.
Yeah, no, he didn't make the film.
Yeah. Who did you want to win for that category?
Collective or actually any of them. Time is also really good. Crip Camp was also really good. What was the other nominee? I can't remember right now, but they were all really good.
If I could just plug Bill's podcast, Bad Gay Movies, my favorite episodes that you do are the Oscar pre-episode where
you,
Daniel, and Glenn Sumi. It's been for the last 3 years, right?
Five.
It's been the last 5 years. Talk about what films they want to win, what people should have gotten nominated. And it's just, it's if you're a fan of movies or you're a fan of stars.
Or a fan of gay.
Any of that, in any combination of that, you will love Bill's podcast, and I really recommend it. In fact, Bill's knowledge, encyclopedic knowledge, you could say, that
it's a great listen to as well. If you, like so many of us, are like, I haven't heard of most of these movies, and maybe some years you do and some years you don't, but this is you know, we don't really do a deep dive on the Oscars, or maybe we are. I don't know. Who knows? It really is insightful because you kind of figure out the movies you want to see or don't want to see. Just know that. No, I know. I'm thinking.
All right.
Marco wants me to make eye contact with you.
No, I was just...
He's like, he's there. He's there in the screen.
No one knows the difference. But thank you. That's very, very nice of you. I really appreciate it. It might mean more coming from people who bother to clean their living room, but I appreciate it all the same.
Yeah, what?
Oh, man, what is he seeing right now? Oh, shit.
I don't see anything. It looks fine. Okay. I'm just kidding. Okay. I'm just
bottles.
Kidding.
Just the booze. Yeah, just all the booze. Lot of,
That's quite the morning cart you've got going on back there.
Yeah, and what's funny is we don't have a nice booze cart. Like most people have a gold glass. We have the IKEA cart full of booze. Well, listen, if you are born on this day, which is what we are doing, that is what this podcast is, you are defined as purposeful, peaceful, and in a continuous search for stability. Just like a true Taurus, you are faithful, you're decisive, you're very conscious of security and getting it. You enjoy being elegant, and you really do enjoy having your friends around, and I hope you have them around on some level in some form today.
Who doesn't enjoy being elegant?
Lots of people. Really? Frances McDormand.
Frances McDormand. There are no combs in that house. They are not allowed. She's a weird form of Amish. They're allowed to put on a dress, but not combs. The combs are the patriarchy.
Talented, amazing people that you completely admire and completely never want to be stuck alone at the cocktail party with.
I see.
Don't corner me. I don't actually want to have the conversation. When she was like, it should be karaoke. I'm like, no, mom's friend. No.
And then howled just because it wasn't weird. Like the evening wasn't weird enough. However, Frances McDormand made history. First woman to have Oscars for both producing and acting.
Oh, wow. That is history and shocking history, Bill, but she won't be the last.
Who's tied with Glenn Close for most non-wins? Because someone asked me, I'm like, only Bill would know this.
Peter O'Toole is also was also nominated 8 times and never won.
I see. Yeah.
He never won for Caligula?
No.
Shocker.
No, as much as he deserved it. Well, speaking of someone else who's never won an Oscar and is celebrating a birthday today and who I'm so very excited to talk about because as far as I'm concerned, she is the queen. While the 90s may have provided us with many glamorous movie stars such as Demi Moore, Sharon Stone, and Rene Russo, none of whose movies my best friend Heather and I ever missed, none of them could ever hold a candle to the queen of style, beauty, and acting talent, Michelle Pfeiffer. After making her debut in the early 80s as a throwaway blonde bombshell roles on the show Delta House and the films Falling in Love Again and The Hollywood Nights, she first showed star quality in the sequel to Grease as Stephanie, then shook up her image with disturbing roles in Scarface, Into the Night, and the romantic fantasy Lady Hawk. Critical acclaim came with The Witches of Eastwick and Married to the Mob, and in 1988 she received an Oscar nomination for Dangerous Liaisons, followed a year later by a Best Actress nomination for what she still says is her favorite of her roles as Susie Diamond in The Fabulous Baker Boys. She played
the
definitive...
She looked great in that.
Yeah, she did.
She was so hot in that, I have to say, Bill.
Riding
on
a piano. She played the definitive Catwoman in Batman Returns in 1992, and that year received a third Oscar nomination for Love Field, then gave one of her greatest performances in Martin Scorsese's The Age of Innocence a year later. Roles followed in One Fine Day, A Thousand Acres, What Lies Beneath, and I Am Sam, her film appearances slowing down as the offers grew less attractive with her encroaching age, plus she wanted to raise her kids and was married to a very rich TV producer. So she didn't need the money. She had something of a comeback in the last few years, appearing in Darren Aronofsky's Mother, the remake of Murder on the Orient Express. And when she enters in that film and flips her hair, I began to cry in the movie theater, like the gay fool that I am. And the Marvel film Ant-Man and the Wasp. Last month, she was nominated for a Golden Globe for her latest film, which has not come out yet, French Exit. She recently launched the fragrance Henry Rose, which is named after her kids. She is the greatest, the very greatest, and she was born on this day in Santa Ana, California in 1958.
And she does not eat the octopus teacher like some of us. She is vegan. That's why she looks so good.
Her, veganism, Angela Bassett, people like that. You look at them, you're like, how do you look better as you age?
You know what? There are a lot of cases of vegans who actually look quite worn out. So I don't know that that's necessarily the case with Michelle Pfeiffer.
Well, I got my Michelle Pfizer yesterday, so I'm happy about that.
Yes,
I
thought it got that one.
Still thinks it's how it's spelled. Yeah.
That made me laugh what Marco wrote, and then what Bill wrote underneath it made me laugh even more. That's actually
her name. Actually, always makes me think of the Golden Girls when they when they meet the funeral director, Mr. Pfeiffer, and he says, "Oh no, it's pronounced Pfeiffer. The P isn't silent." And they say, "Oh, we're here to we need to plan a funeral. Oh, are you planning ahead for Mother?" And Sophia says, "Hey, Pfeiffer, how would you like a punch in your pfeface?"
Pfeface, yeah.
That's a great line. Well, Pfeiffer's co-star, or Pfeiffer's co-star in The Age of Innocence, was Daniel Day-Lewis, who, can you believe it, also celebrates a birthday today. The son of British poet laureate Cecil Day-Lewis, or Cecil, probably because he's a Brit, he entered the film business thanks to connections on his mother's side, who, his mother, by the way, is Jill Balkin, whose father founded the famous Ealing Studios. Daniel had a brief cameo in the John Schlesinger film Sunday Bloody Sunday when he was just 14, but he made his proper debut in the early 80s after studying at the Bristol Old Vic and performing with the RSC, the Royal Shakespeare Company, first on screen in a series of TV movies and a small part in the Oscar-winning film Gandhi, just a little film called Gandhi. He gained notice for his performances in My Beautiful Laundrette and A Room with a View in 1986, after which he graduated to Leeds in The Unbearable Lightness of Being and as Christy Brown, the painter with cerebral palsy in My Left Foot, for which he won an Oscar for Best Actor. Great movie.
He was great. He got a little long in the tooth for me afterwards.
Long in the foot?
Long in the foot. Like after a while, I was like his last few years, I was like, I can't stand watching
this guy anymore. Yeah, because you hated that. Well, we'll get to the one you hated. Anyway, picky about his infrequent film appearances, famous for his devotion to character realism like every other dude actor in his generation. He starred in the films The Last of the Mohegans, In the Name of the Father, The Crucible, and Gangs of New York. Oh yeah, that was him. In 2007, he won a second Oscar in There Will Be Blood. Then after the disaster of the musical Nine. Was it a disaster?
Was he in it?
Yeah.
He played Guido.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Was it a disaster? I don't know.
Yeah, it didn't do very well. For a movie that was like the follow-up to the same director of Chicago and had all those stars and a huge budget and based on a big Broadway musical and stuff, it was quite the disappointment.
Fair enough. Became the first person to win Best Actor 3 times with his performance as Lincoln in Steven Spielberg's 2012 film. You know, I have to say he does disappear in his roles because I forget all of this is him, even though I kind of knew it on some level. Like, oh yeah, Kings of New York. Oh yeah, Lincoln. He has announced his retirement from acting a whole bunch of times. Isn't that always
That's fun? What I don't have time for.
Yeah, well. How do you really announce your we put out a press release?
Well, in one case, he walked out on a performance of Hamlet halfway through because he said he saw his father's ghost in the theater.
Yeah, and all I've got to say is like, I mean, relax.
Because he's Hamlet.
Relax. Fuck off. Yeah.
Can I just finish with the movie that you hate? He came back for Paul Thomas Anderson's Phantom Thread in 2017. You absolutely hated that film. He was born on this day in London, England in 1957.
Phantom Thread was actually my number one film of 2017. So in case anyone wants to know exactly how illiterate Marco is, that's how you know.
Do you remember I'll say this. Marco, do you remember that film?
Yeah, I hated it. I thought the one who played his sister or the female lead was great in it. What was her name? I think she was French or Irish or something.
Luxembourgian, yeah.
Yeah, her. I thought she was great. Everything else, it was like, this is slow moving. I don't give a shit. He's long in the tooth. Enough. I had enough.
I'm in between you two.
But speaking of illiterate, so I read your review on myoldaddiction.com. of Pinocchio.
Yeah.
And I thought it was for the other disaster Pinocchio that Benigni did years ago.
Yeah.
And I was like, so he made 2 disastrous Pinocchio films?
An easy mistake. Benigni only acts in this one, though. He directed the last one.
Oh, I see.
And he played Pinocchio in the last one. In this one, he's only in it as Geppetto, and it's directed by Matteo Garrone.
Right. Yeah. Wow. Okay. Well, I'm glad that it's all settled. All right.
It's a project very close to Benigni's heart, and I think he really cared about getting it right. And that's why he wanted to try it again. But both of them, as far as I'm concerned, are completely unwatchable.
Yeah, after I read your review.
I mean, do we need... Does the world need any more Pinocchio?
No.
It's a god-awful story.
No.
Amanda hates it.
I really, really, really detest the story of
Pinocchio. No, but it is like a signature Italian fairy tale. And so I think Italians are always trying to make like a definitive version of it, you know?
It's an awful story. No, they don't need to. They can do the Romans. Like, honestly, it's the first movie I ever saw in a theater, though. And I screamed when the whale happened. I was like, I'm out.
Yeah, it's pretty intense.
Everybody in this is evil and out to get an innocent boy. Yeah. I'm not enjoying
But that's
this.
The purpose of the story. It's Italians basically teaching their children that they need to behave, because if they don't, these are the things that are... So the whole time Pinocchio doesn't do what his father tells him, and then everything that befalls him is the result of that, right? Like, that's the purpose.
I hated all of it. I hate it to this day, and I hated it at 2.5. And it's one of my first memories is being in that theater and screaming, like, get me out. This is like torture. You're torturing me.
All right. Well, let's see.
It's
if
not
our
Pinocchio's
next
birthday, so yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Let's see if the next celebrant tortures you, Amanda. Pfeiffer's Dangerous Liaison co-star Uma Thurman also celebrates a birthday today. Her career beginning as a model when she was a teenager, before making her film debut in Kiss Daddy Goodnight in 1987. Do you remember that one, Amanda?
No, but the title is Pinocchioing me.
She played the image of Venus de Milo in The Adventures of Baron Munchausen.
Yeah.
Before her breakout role in Liaisons, which was followed by starring roles in the controversial Henry and June, the thriller's Final Analysis, and Jennifer 8. And the disastrous bomb, Even Cowgirls Get the Blues, by Gus Van Sant. In 1994, she played her most iconic role, Mia Wallace, in Quentin Tarantino's Pulp Fiction, for which she was nominated for an Oscar for Best Supporting Actress. She was
Mia
great
Wallace,
at that.
Mia Wallace.
Later roles include Gattaca, with her then-husband Ethan Hawke, The Avengers, The Golden Bowl, Paycheck, and her reunion with Tarantino in Kill Bill Volumes 1 and 2. She won a Golden Globe for her TV movie Hysterical Blindness and was a guest on Smash and had a supporting role in Lars von Trier's Nymphomaniac. She recently, most recently, she was on the series Chambers, and she was born on this day, Amanda, did you know, in Boston in 1970.
Yeah.
I know she's from Boston.
Yeah, she's one of those lefty Buddhist Bostoners.
Yeah, because her father's like a professor, right?
Yeah, I think actually she mostly grew up in Amherst, I think.
And Marco mentioned earlier Leslie Manville, who played Daniel Day-Lewis's sister in Phantom Thread. She was married to Gary Oldman until he left her for Uma Thurman, who married him when she was 20.
Oh, I didn't realize she married Gary Oldman.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
The circle
That's
of
nasty.
Life.
How old was he?
114. Like, he was, you know, Gary Oldman never looked old. Or young, I should say.
Yeah. Anyway, weird.
He was 32, so he was older, but yeah.
That's nasty.
They were only married for 2 years. Yeah.
Oh, how did that happen? How did that not last? And then Ethan Hawke. Oh, well, good for her now. She's doing well.
So Leslie.
You're looking at me weird.
No, I'm sorry.
It's Bill's turn.
All right, I'll continue while you two scrap it out. Leslie Jordan. This is our first time doing three people, I think. So we're still learning.
Is?
Yeah. For birthdays, it would be two people talking in the birthday celebration, just
timer
hanging back.
Yeah. But we're actually sharing it. Okay.
Yeah. Leslie Jordan is best known for playing Beverly Leslie, Karen's nemesis on Will and Grace. His first episode as the character airing in 2001 and most recently in 2020. Well, 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 Karen Walker. Hello, Beverly. Shouldn't you be in a tree making cookies with your brothers? Anyway. He left his Tennessee home to move to Los Angeles and pursue an acting career, breaking into commercial spots before beginning to appear on episodes of television shows like The Fall Guy, Night Court, and Murphy Brown. In the 90s, he began to write plays, performing Like a Dog on Linoleum and Hysterical Blindness, not the same as Uma's movie, off-Broadway, many of which touched on his turbulent childhood and later issues with sex addiction and substance abuse. Television roles also included Reasonable Doubts, Hearts of Fire, and Boston Public. He won an Emmy for his Will and Grace role, and he has appeared in the films The Help, Until We Meet Again, and last year was in The United States versus Billie Holiday. He was born on this day in Memphis in 1955.
Which I think is only got two Bs or whatever from this guy.
From Bill? Two and a half Bs, I think it was. You gave
Although I would have been happy if she won Best Actress. I loved her in that movie.
thought she was gonna. Yeah. Well, Catherine Langford was nominated for a Golden Globe for her performance on the Netflix series 13 Reasons Why. It was her debut performance after a few short films and was followed by her appearing in the heartwarming film Love, Simon, the Oscar-nominated mystery Knives Out, and last year she was on the show Cursed. She was born on this day in Perth, Australia in 1996.
Catherine Langford was nominated for a Golden Globe.
That's
for
her performance. That's the one she just read, Marco.
Oh, shit. Okay. Yeah. Well, sorry.
Kate Mulgrew. He's trying. He's trying to go back and forth so that we can see you and then he can read. All the same.
Okay. Anyways, Kate Mulgrew, who I do like a lot. I don't know who the other person was you were talking about.
I always use her when I have to do a Russian accent, which is probably not. You should probably use somebody actually Russian, but I don't
know. Yeah, according to my Russian friends, she's the pits. I mean, it sounds good to me, but I don't know.
Yeah, there's something. I just like her. I know it's wrong, but I love her Russian
accent. It's a performative Russian accent, and that's what I enjoy about it. It's like Blanche's Southern accent. It's not real, but it's great.
Yeah.
Debatable, but yes.
Well, she made history as the first woman to become captain of a starship in the Star Trek franchise, leading the crew of the USS Voyager on one of the show's spin-off series from 1995 to 2001. She was studying at the Stella Adler Conservatory when she dropped out after 1 year to make her television debut in 1975 on Ryan's Hope.
Good old Ryan's Hope.
Which she stayed on for 14 years.
Wow.
During this time, she also appeared on the show The Word and Mrs. Columbo and was a guest on St. Elsewhere and Cheers. She had roles in the films Throw Mama from the Train and Camp Nowhere. Later was on Warehouse 13, Paul Scheer's spoof series NTSF SDSUV, and in 2013 began playing the role which has made her even more famous, that Amanda, you referenced, and even more famous in her role on Star Trek as Galina Red Reznikoff on Netflix's hit series Orange is the New Black. Last year, she was on the show Mr. Mercedes and will soon be returning as Captain Janeway on an upcoming Star Trek series, Prodigy. She was born on this day in Dubuque, Iowa in 1955.
What's with birthday celebrations? Just because someone's born, we have to talk about them? Yes. And one of them is the one and only Jerry Seinfeld, the stand-up comedian who followed a handful of appearances on the shows Benson and WKRP in Cincinnati with his own show, Seinfeld, which racked up 10 Emmy Awards in its 9-season run from 1989 to 1998 and gave the world the first sitcom to be truly about nothing, and beautifully so. Since it ended, he has made appearances as himself on colleague Larry David's show, Curb Your Enthusiasm. He produced the show, The Marriage Ref, and for 3 years hosted the Netflix show, Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee. He is a very, very wealthy man. That show is in syndication and in reruns all over the world all the time. And he was born on this day in Brooklyn in 1954.
Yeah, it's neat. His wealth, I find him and his wealth and all of that story very neat. I'm every now and then we'll put on Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee. Yeah. And there's something where he's just, I think, you know, he's one of those people that's reached, he did everything he ever wanted to do. So then it's like, okay, what else is he going to do? You know,
which he has a lovely vibe. That. He never seems like he has anything to prove, and he loves other people making him laugh. And I always appreciate when great famous comedians are so confident in their own output and feel that they have enough of a voice that they love allowing other people to make them laugh. Joan was particularly good about this. Joan loved giving other comedians space to make and letting them make her laugh.
Yeah, he's and both of them were real true scholars of comedy.
Yeah.
Really true scholars of the art form, forever learning, forever curious about it, forever working their craft.
Yeah.
In terms of stand-up, which I have such admiration for.
I've come to Seinfeld very late, but I really love it. Like, love it. And I think he's great on it. I know people talk about how he's not a great actor, but I feel like there's something that's perfect about how he's not a great actor. There's something about his vibe on that show that I just love.
Yeah.
Plus, he's so cute.
Agreed. He serves what he needs to serve for what they created. I love Seinfeld. I'll put it on. It's a kind of go-to. I don't know. We don't ever talk about it much, but I'll often be like, do you want to just watch some Seinfeld?
Yeah, I like Seinfeld.
Yeah, I enjoy it. I enjoy, you know, great performances and such a strong, I just love
ensemble.
The
ensemble. Yeah, it's so great.
A friend of ours, is his like number one caterer.
Oh, nice.
And like, you know, brings the cake out and really has a because of that, really has a relationship with his wife more than anything.
Right.
But he's gone a lot. Like he's comedy is his number one. Like, I don't think anybody in his personal life will ever really touch his true love of comedy.
Yeah.
You know? Anyway,
have you seen that Netflix documentary, The Long Shot, Bill?
No.
Yeah. Oh, watch it. It's okay. Short. It's 45 minutes. It's watch it tonight if you can. It's fantastic. That's all I'm going to say. It's a documentary. And with that, nobody is more fantastic on the Bradys than Eve Plum. Let's be honest. Truly. Everybody loves her, loves to hate her. She's, of course, most famous for delivering the line, Marsha, 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 on the Brady Bunch in the early 70s, which she continued on with the animated series, the later reboot, The Brady Brides, and a series of TV movie reunions. She began acting on the Smothers Brothers show when she was just 7. Later, she had guest spots on Mannix, Gunsmoke, and Here's Lucy before taking off on the kids show. She hasn't stopped acting since, debatable, making an appearance in the acclaimed independent drama Blue Ruin, the show The Path, and episodes of Crashing in Blue Bloods. Good for her. In the 1990s, she also began painting, working out of her studio in her Laguna Beach home. They did a whole bunch of things with HGTV
and her art
and Food Network. Yeah,
her arts.
Yeah, we've seen her art. Yeah,
it looks like a person who was on a TV show when she was a young teen and early 20s is painting art as well.
Yeah, that's like Kim Novak's paintings too. Like, I would buy it just because it's Kim Novak's, but I'd be like, put it in the basement.
Bathroom art. She was born this day in Burbank, California in 1958. I watched a lot of Brady's before.
I know. We've talked about this before. I've never seen that show. I know everything about it, but I don't think I've ever seen an entire episode.
Oh, God. Yeah. I know the episode's probably line by line. If you put one.
Oh, really? I didn't know that about you.
Yeah, but I don't ever need to watch them again.
Fair enough.
Like, I never need to eat a can of baked beans again, which is, my childhood was a lot of Brady's and a lot of beans and Franks.
Good old beans and Franks.
Both which kind of make me want to barf.
Well, listen, maybe you didn't like beans and Franks, but perhaps... You loved Richard Klein because everyone loved Richard Klein on 130 episodes of Three's Company.
It came after the Brady's, by the way. So I watched the Brady Bunch, two episodes of the Brady Bunch, and then two episodes of Three's Company.
Well, to be quite technical, it didn't when Three's Company aired. In reruns.
In 1985,
I'm talking. I watched Three's Company when it
was. Yeah, because you're old. We know.
I get it. All right. Anyways, Richard Klein played... everyone's favorite downstairs neighbor, Larry Dallas, the ladies' man who was always trying to get in good with Janet and Chrissy on, of course, Three's Company. He also made his television debut a year earlier on the TV adaptation of Serpico and appeared on the Mary Tyler Moore show and Eight Is Enough before his break on the popular sitcom. Then, after its conclusion, he appeared on Hotel, Murder, She Wrote, Hill Street Blues, Saint Elsewhere, and Matlock. In 1996, he was on 2 weeks of The Bold and the Beautiful. Amanda, I didn't know that. Later, was in the films I Now Pronounce You, Chuck and Larry, Jack and Jill, and Don't Think Twice. A graduate from Northwestern University with an MFA in theater, he appeared on stage in The Foreigner in 2004 and played the wizard in the touring production of Wicked in 2009.
That's right.
Did you see him in it?
Yeah, I think I might have. Oh. Yeah.
Around which time he taught a course on comedy in acting in Middlesex County College in Edison, New Jersey. He has recently appeared as a guest on Blue Bloods and The Americans. He was born on this day in New York City in 1944. And as Larry Dallas, he played a Greek character.
He did, trust me, that was not lost on us.
Well, he was Greek?
Yeah, don't you remember the episode where he broke all the plates?
Yeah.
Sorry, Larry, what was it?
Oh, I didn't realize
he went by Larry Dallas, but it was Dallasopoulos is what they pointed out at one point.
Dallas.
Which is not a real name, but anyway.
But do you remember the episode where they broke all the plates at a big gathering and Jack was like, that's going to cost so much money. Yeah. And then Larry took out.
And like people always ask me about Greeks breaking plates at dances and weddings. And I'm like, I've only ever seen it on Three's Company. I've never actually seen it happen in real life. So I don't know.
By Richard Klein, no less.
Yeah.
I forget what I was going to say.
Okay.
I have vaccine fog. I got vaccine. I got brain fog, guys.
Well, another favorite of mine on the list today is the great Celeste Holm, who may never have become a leading lady, but as a supporting actress was one of the finest performers of Hollywood's golden age. Discovered by 20th Century Fox after she originated the role of Ado Annie in the musical Oklahoma in the mid-40s, the girl who can't say no. Mm-hmm. She made her film debut in Three Little Girls in Blue in 1946, and a year later won an Oscar for Best Supporting Actress in Ilya Kazan's Gentleman's Agreement. After roles in the dramas The Snake Pit and A Letter to Three Wives, she gave my favorite and her greatest performance as Karen in the classic All About Eve. Later, she was in The Tender Trap, High Society, Bachelor Flat, and Tom Sawyer, while on television appeared on her own series Honestly Celeste, episodes of The Toast of the Town, Mr. Novak, The Long Hot Summer, and Nancy. In 1985, she was on Falcon Crest, which we are so happy to see one more time before we go.
I know.
And she had roles in Three Men and a Baby, Touched by an Angel, and the show The Beat. In 1999, she sued Pedro Almodovar for unauthorized usage of All About Eve footage in his Oscar-winning film All About My Mother.
Oh,
her contract for All About Eve stated that her image could not be used without her permission. They settled with an undisclosed sum. She continued to work until her last film, Driving Me Crazy, in 2012, released the same year she died at the age of 95. She was born on this day in Brooklyn in 1917.
What did she die of, poor thing?
she was fighting oil rig fires in Kuwait, Rose. Meryl cites Celeste Holm a lot as one of her favorite influences.
Yeah. where am I? I really do feel like I have brain fog.
Okay. Yeah, you're going to get tired very early tonight.
Well, good thing I'm on set for 7 a.m. tomorrow. I just got the email. Tommy Noonan is best known for playing Gus Esmond Jr. in Gentlemen Prefer Blondes. You know, I've never seen it. The man that Marilyn unashamedly says she's marrying for his money. His film career went back to the late 30s when he was an extra in the MGM film Boys Town. Later appeared in character roles throughout the 40s in Vacation in Reno, The Bamboo Blonde, Samuel Fuller's I Shot Jesse James, and the Oscar-winning World War II film Battleground. He served in the U.S. Navy during the war and on Broadway appeared in the plays How to Make a Man and Men to the Sea. In 1954, he was in the Judy Garland version of A Star is Born. How many versions are there, Bill?
Officially, there are four.
That's crazy. And that's all because they didn't copyright it, right?
No, Warner Brothers, as far as I know, has owned the property since the Judy Garland version, and so they trot it out every once in a while. The first one was there's a movie called What Price Hollywood in early 1932, which is sort of the first version, and A Star is Born in 1937 was based on that, and that's an RKO movie. That's with Janet Gaynor. And then the Judy Garland version is Warner Brothers, Barbara Streisand version, and then the Bradley Cooper version is also Warner Brothers, basically looking into their vaults to see what they can produce without having to pay for rights.
God, I hated that movie. That
and then Cooper. Glitter is actually a remake of A Star is Born with Mariah Carey. It's not, it's the same plot.
Interesting. Yeah.
I probably like that better than the,
I probably would like Glitter better than that Bradley
Lady
Cooper.
Gaga.
God, I hated that movie. Anyway, in 1954, he was in the Judy Garland version. We said this, and then we talked about it for about 10 minutes, but my head is nowhere near anywhere. Later was in The Girl Most Likely, Swinging Along, Promises, Promises, which he also wrote, and made his final appearance in Cotton Pickin' Chicken Pickers in 1967, which was just a year before his death at the age of 46 from, sadly, a brain tumor.
Wow.
He was born this day in Bellingham, Washington, in 1921.
Well, our next celebrant may not be the most elegant person on our list, as we mentioned earlier. He's certainly my favorite. I consider him a genius. Willie Nelson became one of the most recognized country music artists in the 70s with the success of his albums Shotgun Willie, Redheaded Stranger, and Stardust. A figure of outlaw country, which developed in reaction to the conservative restrictions of the Nashville sound, Willie sings the hit songs On the Road Again, To All the Girls I've Loved Before, and Pancho and Lefty. He has acted in over 30 films, including The Electric Horseman with Jane Fonda, Thief Barbarossa, and Honeysuckle Rose, for which he was nominated for an Oscar for the music. In 1990, his assets were seized by the IRS, who claimed that he owed $32 million, a debt he cleared with the sales from the 1992 double album, The IRS Tapes, and the auction of many of his assets.
Wow.
Since then, he has continued touring extensively and released albums every year. His albums totaling 71 so far. Last year, he was in the film Willie and Me. He was born on this day in Abbott, Texas in 1933.
And let's not forget his best film appearance of all, which was in Follow That Bird, the Sesame Street Big Bird biopic.
And let's not forget my favorite joke of all time, which is, what's the worst thing you can hear while you're blowing Willie Nelson?
Oh, I don't know.
I'm not Willie Nelson.
Oh my goodness.
That's a good joke. And that's a really flexible joke. I feel like you can use that in a lot of
I love Pancho and Lefty. That's a song that Emmylou Harris covers very beautifully. Anyway.
He also wrote the song that Patsy Cline made famous.
Which one?
Crazy. Yeah.
He wrote that song?
Yeah, he wrote it. He said, I wrote it, but Patsy Cline owned it.
Well, Always on My Mind, which a lot of people, I mean, people know Willie Nelson wrote Always on My Mind.
Yeah,
because
he performs
also,
it all the time. Yeah.
Yeah. Attribute it to Elvis first. Mm-hmm. And when I was a little kid, I remember reading the lyrics to that and got really, I was like, I did not know Elvis Presley was blind. Because he says, didn't know that I was blind or didn't see that I was blind. Mm-hmm. And I was like, wow, Elvis Presley was blind. And believed that for like a day until somebody corrected me.
One of Hollywood's most influential and intelligent directors, Fred Zinnemann, filmed documentaries during the war and brought that level of realism to the film that established his career and earned him his first Oscar nomination, The Search, a powerful drama about children orphaned by the war. In the 50s, he made the classics High Noon, Oklahoma, A Hat Full of Rain, and won a Best Director Oscar for From Here to Eternity. Later, he made The Nun Story, during which he had an affair with his star, Audrey Hepburn, The Sundowners, and A Man for All Seasons, for which he won Best Director again. He directed Jane Fonda in Julia in 1977 and made his final film, 5 Days, One Summer, in 1982, after which he retired until his death in 1997 at the age of 89. He was born on this day in Rzeszów, Austria-Hungary, in 1907.
Nice. Nice, Rzeszów, or whatever the hell it's called. Listen, rounding out our list today, another director whose films are still very popular with audiences, Erwin Kirschner, is probably best known as the director who took over the Star Wars franchise when he helmed the second film in the series, the first one I ever saw and have very, very distinct memory of. We're talking, of course, of The Empire Strikes Back in 1980, which many consider to be the best of the whole saga. Well, when I was 5, I definitely thought it was. His career began in making documentaries for the United States Information Service in the Middle East in the 50s, before moving to television and then features in the mid-60s, gaining notice with The Flim Flam Man, Up the Sandbox with Barbra Streisand, Barbara, Eyes of Mars with Faye Dunaway, and the remake of the Bond film Thunderball, Never Say Never Again. His last film, RoboCop 2, came out in 1990, after which he directed an episode of Sequest DSV before retiring until his death in 2010 at the age of 87. He was born on this day in Philadelphia in 1923. What a list, what a list, what a list.
Indeed.
Yes, list of amazing
The great Pfeiffer and the great Pfizer. I mean, yeah.
The great Willie Nelson, my goodness.
Uma Thurman, yeah. Celeste Holm with those blue eyes.
Kate Mulgrew.
Pinocchio.
My favorite Russian.
Yeah.
Pinocchio. Listen, our penultimate born on this day for all of us who have followed parts or all of this journey, thank you for your support. We got one final one tomorrow.
Tune in for it,
boys. Thanks so much for doing a three-way, and I don't really know what
else. And it's not even her birthday. All right, everyone, see you tomorrow.